Hello everyone, this is Stuart Smith, co-host of JTalk Extra Time. Before we start this week's pod, a quick programming note. Myself and John have decided to split this pod into two separate podcasts. The first one looking at the bottom of the table, and the second half looking at the top slash playoff race. For reasons that will become clear during the recording, we spent a lot of time on certain issues that came up this week, and we felt that it would be more manageable to digest if we put them in two standalone podcasts. Also, there is some strong language in this podcast, so for those of you with sensitive ears, please be aware of that. I think the language is justified, but for those of you who find that sort of language unbecoming slash unnecessary, my apologies in advance. Anyway, enough of my rambling. Cue the music!
Hello everyone, welcome to another episode of JTalk Extra Time, the podcast that takes a closer look at the goings-on in the lower leagues in Japan, predominantly J2, sometimes J3 as well. I'm John Steele, as usual, and joining me as ever is my partner in crime, Stuart Smith. Hello Stuart, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you John, it's good to be back. We're flying through these episodes, aren't we?
Yeah, I think we've finally reached our sort of consistency just in time for the J2 run-in. So long may that continue. Of course, saying that we'll probably miss next week or something now. So moving on quickly. There was a national holiday this week, Stuart, on Tuesday for the core enthronement ceremony. The new emperor. Did you have a holiday? Did you enjoy that?
Please, I don't have holidays. No, I didn't. No, I didn't have a holiday. I was hard at work. I'll have you know. What about you? Okay. Were you off? You were off, weren't you?
Yeah, I was off, but I played rugby all day with my son and his friend. And at first I was letting them win, and then I was competing properly, as you do, because it turns out the six-year-olds are more sprightly, stronger than me. And then, yeah, I've been suffering from kind of shoulder pain ever since. But thanks for asking. I've passed my fitness test to sit in my chair for this pod. So, without further ado, we should probably get back to what we're good at. This is pontificating about the challenge.
Are we good at that?
The listeners, I think, listeners yeah. don't lie.
They yeah. don't.
Or they don't, to our faces anyway. It's good. Before we talk about the last weekend's games in J2, Stuart, just some quick parish notices. We should say congratulations to Urawa Reds, who won their Asian Champions League semi-final. The second leg tonight was against Guangzhou over in China. Urawa managed to win that game 1-0 on a goal from Shinzo Kuroki and added to their 2-0 win in Saitama in the first leg. Obviously a 3-0 aggregate win, which sees them through to the Champions League final next month, where they'll take on Saudi Arabia's Al Hilal. So well done to all involved. I think we all put our side our kind of suspicions about Urawa and want them to do well in the continental competition. So good luck to them next month. The second leg of the two-legged final will be at Saitama Stadium. So I personally think they've got a good chance of lifting the trophy yet again. Also this midweek, we're recording on Wednesday night, the Emperor's Cup quarterfinals took place. All four ties were pretty tight affairs, I think it's fair to say, Stuart. Kobe beat Oita 1-0, and Shimizu S-Pulse won by the same scoreline away against Sagan Tosu. So that means Kobe will take on Shimizu in the first semi-final. Meanwhile, in Ibaraki, Honda FC, their plucky run has ended by Kashima Antlers, who beat them 1-0. And the all J2 clash down in Kyushu saw Nagasaki beat Vanfrey Kofu 2-1. So the other semi-final sees Kashima taking on Nagasaki. Quite an open draw, I think, so it should be exciting to see what happens in the semifinals. I hope Chris from Lost in Football had a good time as well. I think he was down in Nagasaki in the pouring rain for that one. But we should get back to our bread and butter, I think, Stuart, J2. We're going to do something slightly, not crazy, because we've done it before, but we'll start with the bottom of the table, I think, with our wrap-up this week. That's because the bottom side, near and dear to your heart, FC Gifu, only went and won a game. They beat Ehime FC 2-0 at the Nagoragawa. Yeah, but I'll get your thoughts in a moment. But just a quick review of the game. Kenji Baba hit the post with a delicious sort of long-range chip when it was 0-0. I personally thought that was going to be Gifu's best chance gone, but they kept going, and Takafumi Toma bundled them in front, and a late penalty from Shota Kawanishi. I think we will say that's with a clear-cut spot kick.
Yes.
No reverse angle to confirm. So, they ended up winning the game 2-0. And Stuart, what did you make of this one? A pretty much-needed 3 points, I think, if nothing else.
Oh, most definitely. It's the first time first time Gifu had won at home since May. And so you talk about a much-needed one. I think recently they've been playing a little bit better at home. I mean, they drew against Yokohama FC, and they should have beaten Renofa Yamaguchi in the previous game at home. And so the signs were that they're slightly getting better at home. Although, having said that, Ehime played really well in the first half, and Gifu goalkeeper Yanoli Sievers, I've been a bit critical of him at times this year, but he made one outstanding save in the first half when he came out, made himself big, and stopped an almost certain goal, which would have put Ehime in front. Second half, yeah, it was a slightly more even. The first goal was quite lucky, I think, because it came to Toma via a deflection, which left Okamoto like really out of position, and Toma just hung his leg out, and it went in. The penalty, yeah, there's no reverse angle. It looked like a penalty, and whenever you see a goalkeeper get up and wave his finger, you know it's a penalty. when a goalkeeper smiles, waves his finger, says it's not a penalty, it usually is. Kawanishi, yeah, he's been out for quite a long time. He's only just got back to full fitness. He scored as well, and so clean sheet, a win, and it was a desperately needed win. Other results, I think we'll come on to them in a minute, kind of fell in Gifu's favour to a certain extent as well. But there's signs of life yet. I mean, Gifu have got, they're away at Machida this Sunday coming up, and then they've got their rescheduled game at Kagoshima next Wednesday, and so we're coming into a real kind of crunch time and crunch stage, and this is the perfect entry to that stage, I think.
Yeah, fair enough. Well done to Gifu. I think they've been a bit of a tease this season, because I think I was a stronger believer than maybe you or Richie earlier on. I said they're still in with a shout. They've still got a chance of avoiding the dreaded relegation to J3. And I actually given up on them a couple of weeks ago, probably. And now, like you said, they're signs of life. And that should give them confidence, if nothing else, going into this kind of crucial last five games of the season now. Now it's six for Gifu with that
six
game.
Six for Gifu, yeah.
Can't believe we're almost at the end. But that win sees Gifu on 29 points, still bottom, Stuart, but now only one behind Tochigi in the 21st, and with that game in hand we mentioned already. For Tochigi, it was another pretty limp performance. They went down 2-0 at home to a kind of a D-mob happy FC Rikyu, I think we can say. It was pretty, uneventful game, but in the last 11 minutes, someone we've talked about many times, I think, over the last month or so, Satoki Uejo, popped up with two supremely confident goals, one with his left foot, one with his right. Sort of one man YouTube highlights reel at the moment. I think, FC Rikyu should be putting copyright claims on any videos to try and keep him, make sure he stays under the radar for a bit longer. So Tochigi not looking too clever on 30 points in the drop zone. Just slightly ahead of them on 32, 20th placed Kagoshima United. Now, they picked up a goalless draw at home to a mid-table Yamaguchi in their sort of Kyushu-ish derby game. It's pretty uneventful 0-0, apart from, I think, Nildo, former Verdi midfielder, hitting the bar for Kagoshima late on. I really want to talk about what happened at the end of the first half of this goalless draw, Stuart. And as the host this week, I'm debuting our new segment. We decided to call it Shit House of the Week. Could you?
It's a good title.
Fill in the listeners on this week's Shit House, please.
this week's particular shithouse is Renofa Yamaguchi goalkeeper Daisuke Yoshimitsu. Now, at the end of the first half, in which it was 0-0, we were coming into, it must have been the last 10, 15 seconds of 2 minutes of added time on. At the end of the first half, ball comes in from Kagoshima's left. Yoshimitsu makes a pretty regulation catch. I don't think he might have got brushed on his head, but there's he went down holding his head. At first look, he looked a little bit in pain, holding onto the side of his head as if he'd been kind of elbowed, or if he's had a clash of heads with someone. But as it happened, time was expiring at the end of the first half, and the referee decided to blow the halftime whistle. Upon hearing the halftime whistle, Yoshimitsu sprung up as if nothing had happened, rubbed his hair as if he was annoyed that his hair had been displaced during his blatant acting, and walked off the pitch. I don't know if it was a laugh, it was definitely a smirk that said, yeah, I've just taken up 10 or 15 seconds of time by feigning a head injury, and the referee's fallen for it. Now, time wasting is nothing unusual in football, and neither is feigning injury. However, I think what makes this thing a little bit different and a little bit more serious, there are two things for me. One, it's a head injury. And now, head injuries, as we saw in J1 with Shu Kurata this weekend, who was, I think he was knocked unconscious in the act of scoring a goal. And they just shouldn't be, they just should not be things to A, fake, or B, laugh about. And the second thing is, the referee, I think he should have booked him. I think he should have given him a yellow card for time wasting. But that's by the by. The more important thing is, if that referee goes on to referee another game where someone suffers what looks like a head injury, and his thinking is influenced by what Yoshimitsu did, that is going to produce a serious problem, because head injuries, the difference between getting attention, medical attention or whatever, between 5 seconds and 10 seconds could be huge. And I just think Yoshimitsu has done, he obviously didn't think it was bad. I don't know if Renofa Yamaguchi have said anything or if he said anything, but what he did was so bad in the general context of a heightened awareness of head injuries across all sports. I mean, in rugby they go off, in American football they have an independent doctor assessing for concussions and stuff like that. He's just treated it as a joke, and I don't know if it's possible, I hope he's retroactively booked. And what I'd like to see him do, I'd like to see him go on a head injury awareness course and just see what the impact of head injuries on the brain are. Maybe then he'll think twice about not faking injury just to chew up 10 seconds of a, with all due respect, a relatively meaningless first half game in Kagoshima. I don't know, what do you think?
Yeah, I can't really add anything constructive or useful to what you said. I think you know far more about head injury protocols than me, I think. But yeah, I was just surprised at the kind of how smug and pleased with himself he seemed to be. Because it's not really the sort of thing that we see on a regular basis in the J League. I think maybe not to slight anybody. I mean, I love South American football, but I think it's the kind of thing that's probably pretty commonplace in, you know, Brazilian or Argentine leagues. But it's not really the sort of thing we are accustomed to seeing or we want to see in the J League, I don't think. And I just, as we were chatting, I'm on Renofa Yamaguchi's website to see if they've made any comments. But obviously, I think they perhaps hoping that this, I'm not sure if there is any storm about this or whether we're sort of creating it ourselves. But I think they're probably just hoping it goes away. But we were talking off air just before we started recording. If I was the manager or the chairman, I think I might have said to the goalkeeper Yoshimitsu Monday morning, my office. Yeah, and perhaps I would have made it clear that I don't want to see that again. And yeah, like you said, some kind of club statement or a statement from him personally. When you think about what clubs, you know, do make statements about and stuff, I don't think it will be too out of the realms of possibility. You would say, look, I thought I was helping the team at the time. You know, I shared a joke with the referee. We both thought it was funny. I realise in retrospect that it was a dick move, and I won't be doing it again. I'm donating some money to a charity, or I'm going on an awareness course. I think it's something that the J League prides itself on, is the kind of links with the local community. And we'll come on to Matty Dezelvio in a minute, but it's the kind of thing that has fans up in arms when kind of name changes to teams are proposed, for example. But yeah, I think this is not the sort of thing that you should let people in the community watch. You know, Renovi Yamaguchi supporters, young, impressionable fans. Because these days, more than ever, like if you work with kids or teach kids, they copy this kind of thing. You know, and if the players laughing and joking as they do it, the referee thinks it's funny as well, or does nothing, it sends the kind of tacit signal that, yeah, this is okay. This is another way you can waste time, or, you know, get a positive result in a what is it, as you say, an unimportant sports event, really. Yeah, it was just bad. Like, there's no, I wasn't happy with the player, wasn't happy with the referee, and I'm not happy with the league and the club not saying anything. So I think somebody should. I don't want the guy, you know, strung up or anything.
Yeah, I think that's something that kind of I wanted to stress as well. I mean he's done a ridiculous thing here, but if he just comes out and says, yeah, that's not what I should be doing, like you said, I thought I was just taking up time at the end of the first half. I didn't think it was that serious at the time. Lots of people go down with cramp or phantom back injuries when it comes to injury time or whatever. I didn't think it was that bad, but actually when I reflect on the severity of the head injury situation now, and maybe reference Shukurata for Gamba, I think, yeah, in the future I won't do it. Something like that. And I would have said, yeah, fair enough. Like, he's not.
Yeah, we're not talking about drink driving.
Or exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Abuse,
yeah,
or anything, but just like, literally, as I said, like just dick behavior, basically.
Yeah.
I think as well, I would question the professional pride of players who are so petrified of playing against Kagoshima United that they have to pretend to be injured.
Yeah.
At the end of the first half. One of the most feeble sides to have been in the second tier for many a year, in my view. And that's not, I'm not trying to upset anybody, but, you know, you're not 1-0 up against like Brazil 1970 here, with no minutes left. So I think just the whole kind of
it leaves a bad taste. Yeah,
it does. Yeah. Okay. Well, I think we've probably said what we needed to say on that. And as we mentioned before, Stuart, we are available for sort of contract work, PR, communications. Sure. If anybody needs any help with that. Just don't go through. Don't vet our social media history before you take us on. I think would be the message.
I think you mentioned it just there, but those were two pretty slick goals from Uwejoy. He's really carving out a name for himself in this second tier, and I know the Ryukyu supporters groups kind of, they're getting very edgy about him leaving next year, and if any good J2 teams or even middling J1 teams are looking for someone to take on next year, I would think Uwejo would be kind of high up quite a lot of people's lists. They oozed confidence, those finishes.
He reminds me a lot of Ato Esaka. When he played at Almia, and then obviously ended up back in J2 at Cashew, which wasn't part of the plan. But that kind of, I think, yeah, in the first goal, the way he receives the ball and he's in the kind of in what we would call the inside left channel, I think, the penalty box. But it's no problem. And then for the second goal, it's the opposite situation. I know it sounds crazy, but a lot of players have trouble dealing with the ball coming to them in the opposite flank, if you like, the opposite situation. You get players who can do a lot on one side of the box, but not the other. But like you said, didn't blink, no problem. I know where this ball is going. It's going in the back of the net. And I would describe his finishing as lethal. And we only usually get that from like the guys who are on loan from J1 kind of academy star players. So I don't know. I think I read on Twitter, obviously, you know, Jeff and the guys, like, please, you know, they got a pleading with you could sort of make Uejo a big offer to stay. But I'm just not sure if it's money, you know, if a club. I mean, if Urawa win the ACL next week, and they're like, would you like to come and play for us next season? You're not going to get many games. I think he'd still go. So, you know, obviously I've gone nuclear by suggesting Urawa, but you know what I mean. The club. Kobe to Kyogo Furuhashi.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, Uejo to Urawa, Leonardo to Kashima. We've got all these transfers lined up. We've got to start our own agency. Yeah.
Revenue streams. Yes. But yeah, I think he does need. I'm torn between keeping Uejo on the down low to try and protect him from vultures, if you like, and then he's playing too well and he's too good not to discuss on a regular basis, I'm afraid. Yeah, sorry, Jeff.
Yeah, sorry.
Okay, well, we'll continue to kind of slowly crawl up the J2 table, hopefully, like Gifu will do over the next couple of weeks. Stuart, in 19th place now, we have Machida Zelvia. Now, they're on 36 points, so they're 4 ahead of Kagoshima, and they're 6 points clear of the drop zone of Tochigi, but that buffer of 6 points doesn't look as comfortable as it did a few weeks back. Last weekend, rather, Machida actually picked up a pretty creditable point on the road away at Mito. That game finished 1-1. And Machida had to come from behind to get that point. Daiki Mia headed Mito into an early lead. I think they had the better of the early exchanges, certainly. But then Yuki Nakashima levelled with a penalty for Machida, but he actually, penalty was saved, but he was able to control and score the rebound. That was a penalty given for the handball, I think, also by Mia. So he was busy the action early on. And I think ordinarily, that result, by the way, moves Mito back up into 6th place, and we'll talk about the top of the table in the playoffs in a moment. So I think ordinarily, if you're down at the bottom of the table and you go away from home to a team in the top 6 and get a point, that's a pretty good result. But just the way that results have gone recently, the way the table's looking, I don't think Machida can relax just yet, can they?
I don't think so. I think almost they can secure their season by winning it next weekend, and we'll go over who they're playing next weekend when we come to our fixture roundup. But I think I was under the assumption that when they signed Taiki Hiroto on a full transfer, that they would just automatically kind of he would lift them out of their slump, and rather like last year, he would lead them to kind of bigger and better things. But hasn't quite worked out that way, and I'm pretty sure Machida are looking over their shoulder. They've got a 4-point buffer now, but it's not that far out of the realms of possibility that one of Tochigi, Gifu, God forbid, Kagoshima can overhaul that haul of 36 points. I think ultimately they'll be safe, but I think it will be more of the deficiencies of the teams below them rather than kind of Machida being that much better. Although, kind of temper that, because a 1-1 draw at Mito is not a particularly bad result these days. You know, it's you know, Mito a top six on merit, and so for Machida to go there, go behind, kind of withstand a lot of pressure, and then kind of force the issue with the penalty equaliser or the penalty rebound equaliser is a pretty good thing. And you know, they it is a creditable point, but I think a lot will. I think a lot of what they're looking at this season will depend on the game on Sunday against Gifu.
Yeah, it's certainly been a slim pickings this season generally, and certainly over the last month or so. I don't think they've won one in the last five games, actually. But it's only four draws and one defeat. So not, yeah, difficult to get a read on them. I think I have to get in touch with Fortress Nozita and fellows Elvistra on Twitter for some kind of in-depth kind of analysis, maybe a post-mortem at the end of the season. If they, I think you're right, and I think they will be safe, but I don't think anyone will be particularly happy with how the season's panned out thus far. Yeah, and a big game, as you mentioned, against Gifu coming up at the weekend, but we'll talk about that in due course. We should mention on a Machida tip, and maybe this is something that will come up when we do a post-mortem on Machida at the end of the season, their proposed name change for next season by their new money bags owners, cyber agents, actually being postponed. There was an official club statement, I think last week, sort of referencing this sort of quite harsh kind of backlash from supporters to this proposed name change from FC Machida Zelvia to FC Machida Tokyo, the Tokyo written in katakana. So at the moment, according to the club statement that came out last week, that's now on hold. And next season, 2020, the club will still be FC Machida Zelvia as they are now. But I think there's some kind of ongoing consultation. It's clear that this is not dead, and I'm sure that cyber agent, the owners, will try and bring some form of this this name change or rebranding, if you like, back. So we'll probably be having similar conversations 12 months from now. It might be like the Boris Johnson's Brexit deal, Stu. You know, it's just pretty much the same thing. We won't get into the politics because we want to go to bed at a reasonable hour. But I suspect that one won't go away. I think we'll be having the same conversation next year, won't we? On that.
What, Brexit or Machida Zelvia?
Please, satire. God, not Brexit.
We can do satire as well. Yeah, I think I said last week I wouldn't be surprised if it got walked back, and I don't think it has been walked back, but the postponement doesn't surprise me because they were quite clearly unprepared for the kind of backlash that they received from Machida supporters. And yeah, maybe there's time and scope for a more detailed and more, what's the word, culturally sensitive, if that's an appropriate phrase in this context, historically sensitive approach to renaming. It's difficult to get it right, but it's very easy to get wrong, and I think that's what they've done right now. I think they've got it wrong, and I would hope that they would go on the path of trying to get it as right as they can in consultation with Machida supporters first and foremost, and then possibly the J League as well, just to make sure that everything's as it should be.
Fingers crossed.
Yes.
Okay. So we talked about the bottom four in the table. So just as a reminder, from bottom up, Gifu, Tochigi, Kagoshima, and as we mentioned, Machida Zelvia, fourth and bottom, still can't relax for this season just yet. One team who we sort of basically agree can breathe a lot more easily at the moment is the 18th place team, Avispa Fukuoka. Now, they've moved on to 38 points, eight clear of the drop zone now. That's because they won 2-1 at home against Niigata at the weekend. I think, I'm pretty sure this was the first game back at level 5 after the Rugby World Cup forced them to the Athletic Stadium nearby for a couple of games. I might be wrong, might be the second game back, but certainly they tend to do better at their home stadium than they do at the Athletics track. I saw a tweet, I think from Navy Blue Wasp, about their record at the Hakatanomori Athletic Stadium this season. It's pretty dreadful, pretty dreadful reading. Anyway, yeah, they won this game 2-1. It's an absolute screamer from a Tiger, my car, probably the best goal, one of the best goals of the weekend, certainly. That was early on to make it 1-0. Koji Oshinohara made it 2-0 later in the second half. And, super goal again from that man, Leonardo, made sure that the nerves were jangling at the end when he pulled one back. It seemed impossible to, there was nothing on, but he somehow chested the ball between the two central defenders and swept it in. So another player who's on fire at the moment, or has been on fire all season. But Fukuoka on 38 points now. Stuart, I reckon that makes them safe. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree with that. I think they're safe. That was some strike from Maekawa. That was a hit. You could have had two goalkeepers in there and they wouldn't have saved that. That was struck so well. But they were hanging on at the end. I think Cervantes made a really good save. If it wasn't the last touch of the game, it was certainly one of the last touches. He clawed a header away from almost inside his own post. Niigata piled the pressure on. But yeah, Avispa held on. And yeah, I would say that they're safe. I don't see any one of Kagoshima, Tochigi, or Gifu reaching 38 points this year. Yeah. So I think they'll be fine, but I'll be interested to see what they do going forward. They've got a lot of big decisions to make this summer. This winter. They've got some big decisions to make this year because, to be honest, they've been underwhelming. They've been saved, like you've said, on many occasions by their goalkeeper, Cervantes. They've got kind of an ageing core of players. Obviously, Jorgo's there, Jun Suzuki. I think they need to decide what kind of direction they want to go in from this season forward, because the potential is there. Like, if they're good, they'll get the crowds and they'll get the backing of a admittedly baseball mad city, but they'll be able to bring in the sponsors, they'll be able to bring in the money. But just this season has been just dire for them. I mean, they've had no continuity in almost anything. They didn't have continuity in the manager. They haven't had continuity in their stadium. They haven't had continuity in their team. In fact, the only thing they have had continuity with is Cervantes, and he's been absolutely outstanding. So, they're safe now, but I think they've got a big off-season of decisions to make.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to compare how they and Machida's Elvia approach the close season, I think, this year, because like you said, I think any players that have shown promise, like Cervantes, will be in demand and are almost sure to leave. What those clubs do about the managerial situation should be interesting as well, I think. In the early days, we talked about whether it was too early to fire Fabio Pecchia from the Fukuoka job. I think the results since he left have demonstrated that he wasn't really the problem. I think it's these underperforming players, with the exception, as you mentioned, of Cervantes. I think without him, Fukuoka would be in the bottom two for me, because he's been worth... I mean, they've picked up 38 points. I think he's 10 of them, at least. I think that they just need a breather. They need to have a break and come back again next year. Talking of needing a breather... 17th place sees good old Jeff United on 39 points. Nine points clear of the relegation zone with five games to go. Surely even Jeff couldn't contrive to get relegated from this position, could they? although I see they've won fewer games than Avispa Fukuoka, just to look at the table now. Their big Chiba derby, where they hosted Kashima at the weekend in front of almost 15,000 fans, was the sort of... Kashima were obviously a good team, but it was a pretty pathetic performance from Jeff on the day, I think. Masatoshi Mihara, who doesn't seem to score very often, grabbed two goals. But in the middle of that Mihara sandwich was an absolutely scorching drive from Yusuke Sagawa. But in truth, I think Kashima pretty much cantered to victory here, a 3-0 win, which just kind of reaffirms that they're in pole position for the J2 title. But I think, yeah, Jeff is safe, but it's not. I think Jeff, Fukuoka, and Zelby would be happy to just not not play the last five games and just go on holiday early. I don't know. Do you want to mention anything on that game, or should we move on and take a look at the top?
Well, just to think about your blood pressure, I'll keep it brief. But Jeff,
just say if you see the highlights of this game for the third goal.
Are you going to mention the defender?
It's Funayama, who is a very experienced player. I think he's 30, and he thinks that a Jeff defender behind him, I think it's Ebert, Brazilian defender, he thinks that he is going to kind of come onto the ball. So he tries to kind of, it's difficult. Jeff defending is always difficult to explain verbally. He sort of, you shouldn't be screening on rushing players when they're sort of on top. This is Gifu style.
Yeah.
I don't understand what anybody's trying to do there. And I think you could blame, the defender should realise that there's danger and be in a different place. But why on earth is a sort of wide forward trying to sort of shepherd the ball into his own penalty? I don't understand. I couldn't understand what I was seeing.
Well, I think for that goal, I think by the time who scores it? Mihara, right? Yeah, Mihara scores it.
Again,
So by the time Mihara is in shooting position, Ebert has just turned away. He knows that ball's going in the back of the net.
Yeah, before he just walked it off.
It's amazing when you look at it. He just gives up. And it's kind of difficult to say that, but at that point in time, he's just thought, fuck this. I'm not having any... Sorry. I'm quoting. He's just thought, yeah, bollocks to this. I'm not having anything to do with this. That's completely on Funayama. I'm just going to turn away and enough of this. Enough of this.
Yeah.
But all three goals. The first goal was a ball that got knocked down in the box, and Jeff players were just waiting for a Kashua player
got knocked down by the player that scored it. Chested down a ball inside the other team's penalty area in the first 15 minutes of a derby.
and the second goal, so Sagawa's finish was absolutely fantastic, but he doesn't get that chance unless the ball is passed from a Jeff United defender directly to a Kashua Reysol midfielder,
If you watch the reaction of that ball, and I know it ended up about 5 years. That ball was meant for Andrew Kumagai, and if you look at his reaction when he realised that the ball's not coming to his feet, he's it's as if he thinks he's been hit on the head and thinks he's Stefan Effenberg, and he's that ball hasn't arrived within the 3 millimeter space that I expected you. So I'm just going to throw my hands up.
Yeah,
and I'm going to let the guys behind me sort that out. And it's you're the defensive midfielder. That's your job. It isn't your job to moan when you don't get the ball. It's your job to cover for other players.
Yeah,
and Jeff. I think a lot of people enjoy seeing Jeff United sort of basically arsing around, embarrassing themselves because they've got the best stadium. One of the best stadiums in the division. And they do have that. In the past, certainly have had that big club kind of hubris about them. But most of the fans don't have that. I don't think no set of fans deserves to win trophies or even individual matches. But they do deserve to pay their money and go to the stadium and see the team try their best.
Yeah, and I don't think that they did. And
too many players are just not bothered. Too many players just not bothered.
Honestly, the last goal is incredible. I would urge everyone to go and seek out that last goal because, Funayama just decides that instead of going for the ball, he'll just stand back and let Mihara just come in on the presumption that Eberti is not going to turn around and just walk away from what's about to unfold. It would be shocking if it wasn't so commonplace with Jeff United. I think that's what I would say. Incredibly, Sato wasn't at fault for any of the goals, and they still got tonked 3-0.
He actually played well.
He did. He made a really good save when the game was already lost, I suppose. But I just think we've spoken about it an infinite number of times. There's just something not right about there. They need to get a priest in or to do one of those kind of Shinto or Buddhist kind of
Juju.
Whatever it is, they need a complete detox from top to bottom of that club. And if they don't, they're just gonna have more of the same next year.
I think to have like, and this is, I'm not picking on FC Gifu here, and I wouldn't dream of doing that.
But you're damn right, you wouldn't. Yeah.
To only have 10 points more than Gifu when you compare the resources,
yes,
and the money, mm, and the facilities that are available is not criminal. It should be. You know, it's just unbelievable. And like, I think the fans, Jeff fans, they're not asking for, they don't expect to be top of the league and on 100 points and 100 goals, but they expect the team to be competitive. That was basically the last game of the season because they're safe and they're going nowhere. If you can't get up,
they should have
a derby. But they could have really thrown a spanner into Kashiwa's promote, because Kashiwa have been rocking the last few weeks. They could really have shaken them up by I know I'm a Stoke City fan, even just by getting in their faces a little bit.
They should have left.
Difficult for them to play.
They should have left everything out on that pitch.
Well, that's my point. Like, what were you saving yourselves for when you're deciding in the first 20 minutes you're not going to track back for a lost ball? What are you conserving energy for? Because you've got no games. There's no games left after this one, really.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's incredibly frustrating, and I just feel like anything else, you want to pay your money and you want to see the players try the best. And I think it hurts players, and you've spoken to more players than me. It hurts them when they're given that criticism. But we're faced with the evidence in front of you. How it's indefensible. You can't defend literally.
Yeah,
it's like if I've played football and so have you. If you showed me the video and said, "Are you sure you're doing your best there?" I'd have to say, "Well, even if I was, I totally accept it looks like I wasn't. It looks like I didn't give a shit." You know.
That's Yeah, it's either well. That's the thing. It choose whichever stick you want to be beat. You want to be beaten with. Do you want to be called incompetent, or do you want to be called like too complacent? Because I mean, they're both as bad as each other, and especially like you said, supporters. Jeff's supporters probably are used to being in J2 now. Well, they should be. I mean, Jesus, they've been there long enough. But I mean, the Jeff supporters are no different from Kanazawa supporters. They're no different from Okayama, no different from Yamaguchi, no different from Ehime. When they pay money to watch their team play, they might not expect wins. No team should go into a game against Kashiwa Reysol and think, "Oh, we're going to win this," because Kashiwa are top of the table for a reason. But what they should expect is some kind of professionalism, and they should expect the players in that game, they should have expected their players to have given their all. And I wonder how many Jeff United players could have looked themselves in the mirror after the game and asked, "Did I give everything I could there?" And I wonder how many players would have been able to say, "Yeah, I gave everything in that game."
Yeah, I think as well we're going to come, you know, at some point there'll be a season preview for next year, and it's like Jeff is just so far short in every department of what you would need to even be in the top 10 at this point. They're really going to have to move people out in the winter, and I'm sure they will, but they've got to make sure they get good people in, because, you know, they sign a lot of players from J1 clubs. They have a good set of players on paper, but they just, when they go to Jeff, they don't do anything. Players like Yusuke Chajima don't do anything. Harigome doesn't do anything. So yes, all right. I think that's enough, Jeff, for my blood pressure.
I'm glad we kept that brief. Yeah.
So Chiba TV, the local TV station, did a kind of, I didn't actually see the feature, but they did a kind of, they trailed this game, reported on this game quite heavily, obviously Chiba Derby, the last one for a while because Kashima had been promoted, but they had a camera inside the locker rooms during the pre-match team talk, and one Jeff player is stark bollock naked on TV in the image. Pretty sure it is Funayama, and his crown jewels are. I have a high definition TV, but not 4K HDR. So anyone who does.
It's there. Yeah,
knock yourselves out. Yeah, it's not Arnold Schwarzenegger in the Terminator, but it's something to think about nonetheless. All right, Stu, let's move on quickly.
Sure. It's going lowbrow, so and we don't want that.
Yeah.
So that's it for part one of this week's podcast. Join us for part two when John and I discuss the top of J2, the playoff race, and we look ahead to this weekend's fixtures, all in part two.